Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You are listening to Red Eyes Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. And we are, as always, very glad to have you along with us. I hope you're having a good day today. Well, today we're speaking with Kristina Ujuland. She is an Estonian veteran politician who studied law and politology at University of Tartu. She is the founder and leader of the People's Unity Party. Mrs. Ujuland was once the foreign minister of Estonia. She is a member of Riigikogu, the Estonian parliament, and served on the European Parliament in the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe, the ALDE group. Well, Kristina is with us to talk about the increasingly troublesome issue of mass immigration into Estonia and Europe in general, and how the European Union is seeking to force mass immigration, and what this will mean if nothing is done to stop it. Welcome, Kristina. It's so good to have you here. Thank you so much for taking our call today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. Now, you're a seasoned politician in Estonia. You've been foreign minister and member of the European Parliament, among other things. And you've been making some headlines lately for your, fearless and vocal critique of immigration into Estonia, and also what the EU, of course, have been suggesting, that member states be forced to take in immigrants. But before we talk about some of the work that you've been doing to bring attention to something that, many basically just choose to ignore and stay away from, it's too controversial, despite that it's such an important area. But before we go into that, maybe we can just put this in context for our international audience, those who are not in Europe, if you will, and explain a bit what things are like in Estonia at the moment. I mean, I can just mention that it's a very small population, about 1.3 million. It's about the size of Denmark. It has Finland to the north, across from the Gulf of Finland, to the west, across the Baltic Sea, you have Sweden, and to the south, you have Latvia and Lithuania below that. And of course, to the east, you have Russia. But tell us first, Kristina, about the economic situation in the country.
Well, many questions in one time. And I think, first of all, I should say that this immigration issue is not only the issue of Estonia. It's the issue of the whole Europe, and this is about the history, future history of the whole Europe. But we will come back to this later, I hope so. But your question about the economic situation in Estonia, it's so-so. I mean that Estonia is, after 20 years regaining independence, is developing like any other European economy, not really boosting, but we have some economic growth around 1-2% in a year. But nevertheless, Estonia is a relatively poor country, of course, comparing, for example, with Sweden. And definitely there are some reasons from the past, from the Soviet occupation and so on. Actually, one very, very important moment for Estonian people when we are speaking about immigration, the possible massive immigration, is exactly the economic and social moment. These benefits, what are foreseen for immigrants, are much, much higher than those social guarantees what ordinary Estonian people are receiving on a daily basis. And this is unfair. People feel that it's totally unfair.
Yes, exactly. Now, do you have a fairly functioning welfare system in Estonia, or how does that work?
Well, the welfare system is functioning well. We have Estonia as well, the country who experiences e-medicine, which I think is among the front runners in Europe. And actually the president of Estonia, Mr. Toomas Hendrik-Ilves, is even the chairing the pan-European working group how to develop the e-medicine and for across the Europe, or for the whole Europe. The medical aid, the social aid, it's all functioning. It's functioning. But the question is about the resources. The question is about money, frankly speaking. And again, if we just take a very simple example that the medical care, for example, for Estonians, the guarantees, for example, the teeth treatment is really expensive, and many Estonian people suffer just to having a very poor teeth because of the very high price. And if we now see that the immigrants already who are in Estonia and then those who are planned to be deported to Estonia, that they will get it free of charge. And at the same time, Estonian people do not receive it, even children, well, they have some sort of treatment, but nevertheless, it is simply unacceptable, and then people do not understand it. How can it be that your own people of your own country, your own nation, is not treated fairly vis-a-vis with the immigrants who are planned to be transferred or transferred deported to Estonia?
I know. It's pretty interesting. We have the same thing in Sweden, of course, where if you're not part of the system, if you're not a citizen and whatnot, you get certain privileges that you don't get if you're a citizen, which is quite interesting. But how is it with, let's just talk about the population demographics for a little bit in Estonia, and if there are a lot of immigrants already. I think, I mean, primarily you do have Estonians, of course, and then I think the next largest group is Russians, if I'm not mistaken, and then you have from a couple of different countries around there. But is there a lot of immigrants today from non-European countries in Estonia?
Well, what concerns to the past and what was the major change in demography in Estonia during the Soviet time, it's the fact that we have about 25% of Estonian population are non-Estonians. That means that they are either Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, Georgians, Uzbekis, Azerbaijanis, all this spectrum whom we had in the Soviet Union. And those people, after 20 years of independence of Estonia, they have pretty well integrated into the Estonian society. Actually, they enjoy exactly the same economic social rights what Estonians do. And as you know, that they can vote in the local elections even if they are not citizens. And in the moment, I must say that these people, non-Estonian people, are even more concerned about the possible new wave of immigration from Africa. They are very united, while we are now started to collect the signatures among population against this possible massive immigration, then this Russian speaking, we call simply all together them Russian speaking people. They are very united, and they are very happily giving the signatures against this kind of immigration, because they immediately understand that this will be a big burden on the social system. This will be a sort of burden in the field of labor market, even if we don't believe that these people immediately will run to work. We have seen it from the other European countries, that normally these immigrants from Africa, they many of them even are not literary. I mean that they even cannot write and read. So it's a question what kind of work they can do at all.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I understand your critique, obviously, of what is happening and what is planned now in the European Union. I mean, I'm from Sweden. I know how bad things can get there, and I've seen our country kind of plummet, if you will, and gone down in many different areas. And unfortunately, we've created a situation for ourselves where Swedish people don't feel safe anymore. We just had a murder, by the way, of a 17-year-old girl in my neck of the woods. Lisa Holm was her name. Was one of the biggest search efforts in modern times, and the suspects were immigrants. The case is ongoing right now. You know, the crime rates have just skyrocketed in recent years, and it's very disheartening for me to see what is happening, and that the politicians and the media, they're doing this to us without giving us a vote on the issue to hear what the people actually want. But maybe you can, for a moment, just explain what some of your other main concerns are with immigration and how this is going to change the country as you perceive it, Kristina?
Well, yes, we spoke quite a bit about the social burden in the social security field, but we should also speak about the burden in the field of educational system. Again, because of the fact that we have that 25% of Russian-speaking population, we used to have the Russian-speaking schools, and still we have. And now we started to reform the educational system that on the level of the secondary school already all Russian young people are studying about 60% of the subjects in Estonian. And it has been a very hard process, not only technically, but also very much in sense to explain Russian people why it's in favor for themselves to study in Estonia to be more competitive later on in the labor market. So we started this process. It's now in the middle of the way. We are in the process of reforms of our educational system. And now if we imagine that within next 1 year, we shall have the number of newcomers from strange countries about whom we don't know much, where from they are coming, what kind of languages they're speaking, what kind of education they would need. Then it will also make a huge, huge financial and any other kind of troubles in our educational system. That's one thing. Well, the other question, I think this is the general, the European question. This is the danger to the European cultural space. And exactly, in Estonia, while we are so small, we have less than 1 million Estonians left living in Estonia. And if we imagine that even if we take 100 Africans, you must immediately understand that this is not 100, it is immediately 1,000, because they will bring all their families here. And this proportion of interference of the European cultural space, I'm not speaking about only Estonian cultural space, but must be protected. But in general, I think that this is already has become the whole danger for the whole European countries, to Sweden, to France, to Italy. You should just see what's happening in Italy. I was just in Italy a few days ago. I came back to Estonia, and I'm going there next week again. So it's terrible. I mean that it's such a process has been opened, and if we don't stop it now and immediately, then we cannot stop it ever. And this will be a real danger to the European cultural space.
It will be. I agree with you 100%. It's strange how that there are so few people that are speaking out about this, and we can get into that a little bit later about what. About maybe how people are criticized, maybe even how you have been received. But before we do that, I just wanted to emphasize what you mentioned, that it's not only concerning Estonia. I mean, you're a very small minority in the world speaking. I mean, if immigration opens up in the way they're planning, you'll be receiving people from countries that outnumber you 10 to 1, 20 to 1, maybe even 100 to 1 in some cases. And you'd think that in the world that we live in today, where so-called diversity is so hysterically celebrated, that Estonians, who are a minority in the world, would be protected, and that they would be, that their interests would be looked after. But that's not what we're looking at, is it?
Right. Yes. I think that this this process is really a big danger, not only even such a small community like Estonians are. But if you take even Finnish community, it's like 5 million people. They are not big vis-a-vis to the speak African communities the sort of Middle East communities. We are very, very small, and we need to be united and to start to protect ourselves, because otherwise this invasion from Africa to Europe or from the Middle East, it's a historical threat to the whole Europe and Europeans. And I mean that this is a time to start to speak about this process honestly to our citizens, to our people. We should not be afraid to be called racists or whatsoever if we don't have right anymore to defend ourselves, our cultural identity, our traditions. So far, where we are going to then, what is going to happen in 10 years in Europe? We should not see only the process today that to see this sort of sad picture sometimes what the international press is trying to present to the citizens of Europe that there are a lot of little children or mothers. Yes, they are these refugees who have a legal status. Of course, they need a defense and protection. But mostly, we must see the truth that the most of these immigrants now are coming from Africa. They are young men.
It seems to be only men too, by Christine. I have hardly seen any women on these pictures of people coming in.
Yeah, I just want to say that sometimes there are some sort of demagogic news that there are a lot of women, a lot of children. This is not true. I mean that, of course, we're all human beings, and if there are the cases like female or children, they will always receive this international protection as refugees. But we should not really follow this kind of demagogy trying to explain, even in Estonian press is also trying to explain, listen, these children need help. Of course, we're helping. And the very important moment, of course, I should also say that Estonia always has been following the United Nations refugee quotas and the international law. We have the refugees in Estonia. Of course, we have from Afghanistan. We have from Ukraine in the moment. Many people are coming in. We have from Afghanistan people, we receive them because they are applying individually and we receive them if they are really, if they need the protection, we do it. But now we are speaking absolutely about another process. It's about the process of, as you said, really, really many, many young men, hundreds, thousands, 1 million is sitting now in Libya, as I just read the day before yesterday from the international news. 1 million in Libya are waiting when they will be crossed over the Mediterranean Sea to Europe, and this is nothing to do with the international protection under the refugee law. It's just the invasion of Europe, and that's it. That's it.
Well, people are naive too. I mean, we've had, look at the situation in Sweden again as a worst case scenario where you have people who are dedicated to the goals of ISIS, for example. They've established a presence in Sweden and the politicians in Sweden are so naive that they think, in some cases, they think it doesn't apply. In other cases, they think we can change these people, just, you know, give them a job and an apartment and their dedication, their religiosity will all of a sudden go away. It's kind of indicative of secular mind, maybe perhaps in the Nordic countries. I'm not sure, but my point is, these are security questions that should be looked at more seriously. But it seems like those questions don't apply anymore, right?
Well, now you touched really a very very important point. That what it means really if. If we will have such a quantity of Muslims, for example, in European countries, I just happened to see just a very, very strange recording in YouTube today, which is referring to the Swedish program where someone who is called the Imam Sheikh Ahmed has been interviewed and he said clearly that these so-called unbelievers, that means Christians, should be killed and Europe should be invaded and occupied. And when the reporter asked him that, you now live here in Sweden with the Swedish taxpayers' money, why, how can you then accept this money of Swedes? And then this Sheikh Ahmed responding that no, it's not the Swedish money, it's the God's money or Allah's money.
That's right.
Like that.
Yeah.
I think that this is serious. I mean, this is a security threat. This is a very, very serious threat. I mean, that this is, okay, we all have in democratic countries, we have the freedom of speech, but I hope that this man is now jailed because it's really threatening people of Sweden, for example, first of all, and then not only people of Sweden, this message now in YouTube, it's spread all across the world, so the whole security situation is getting very tight, and again, coming back to Estonia, now one of the concerns now what our government is discussing, it's not only about the number, how many people Estonia can receive or should receive, but in parallel, we are discussing, the government is discussing very much about what kind of new security threats these people will bring to Estonia. We don't know what kind of diseases they will bring to Estonia. We don't know their background. Either they are just simply criminals. Either they are members of sort of ISIS fighters, who they are. We don't know exactly. This is, I think that this is, the process is very dangerous. The whole this, the proposal of the European Commission, suggested that this 40,000 people should be spread across Europe, and plus the others, the newcomers. I think that this is absolutely irresponsible because normally the countries of the world, they including the European countries, if we receive the refugees, I'm speaking about the refugees, then we should have the right to control and check their backgrounds. But now we are facing the situation that the European Commission is suggesting to the member countries, says, please, Estonia, you take 1,000 people as they did, the other countries, the other numbers, and we don't have really the possibility to check the background of those people, if they are criminals or what, who those people are, we don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I just want to mention quickly the video you talked about. I linked that up on the page. I saw it actually today as well. It's only... it only has Swedish subtitles, the version I found, folks. But take a look at it, and I'll see if I can find another version in that is subtitled in English. But
there is actually the translation in Finnish as well, so you can read it in Finnish, and then the Finnish-speaking people can follow it as well.
Okay, great, excellent. Now, what you're talking about, people who lack a passport or an ID or something like this, in some cases we've had situations where people who have been thrown out of the country or they haven't been permitted or something, they can basically just throw away their ID and then get back and try again because there's no record of who has been tried before. I don't think there's even that there are identifications taking, for example. So you might have same people trying over and over and over again just to get in. And what you mentioned about diseases, about foreign diseases coming into the country, all of these things are now, they're politically incorrect to discuss because we don't recognize that there are differences. We don't recognize that there is a reality to these things. And this environment is very, very dangerous, but people don't take it seriously because they're more concerned with being politically correct, Kristina.
Yeah, well, this is actually, Europeans are facing the choice either to just stop our existence, or we will be united and stand together against of this process of invading Europe. I mean that I said last week also in one of my Facebook statements that not only Estonians who are now collecting, or Estonian people, including Russians, who are collecting the signatures, we should start the collecting the signatures all across Europe. I mean that all European nations are in danger. And we must stop it because, you see, we should also see the whole picture, the big picture, that it's just, this process did not just start it over the night. If we just recall the background of this Arab Spring, which, in my view, opened this process in one or another way, the conflict in Syria, all something is behind of all these conflicts and of this now this even the wars in territory of Iraq and Syria. So I think that we must really wake up. It's time to wake up and stop this stupid political correctness, which is absolutely against of European future. And if we are just going to continue with closed eyes and shut ears, so we will just die out in Europe if we continue this kind of policies. Europe is not like a sort of endless territory where you can just provide the space for anyone who wants to come. And even if there are really people in trouble, let's say in Middle East or in Africa, I must tell to people who listen to me, please understand, it's not the whole Africa, not the whole Middle East is in trouble. There are a lot of safe places in Africa. Why don't they go there? Why don't they go to countries like Zambia or some others, or like Turkey, where it's also this still there a lot of space and then a lot of possibilities to deal with these people, because they are coming from the same cultural space. It's much more easy to integrate those people who need help. Why it's Europe? I must say that this is so confusing that Europeans. Let's even look a little further from this Nordic area. Let's go to France. Let's go to Italy. And if you ask Italians or French people, they're so confused. Why Marine Le Pen has such a success in France? Because French people feel that they are in danger. They must do something. And this is why this party receives like already 30% of the votes in the elections. So it's a trouble that of course we are again we are human beings, and if there are people really who are refugees who can be under the international law defined as the refugees, of course Europeans always have helped those people, and we should continue to helping those people, but we should stop this kind of massive immigration of people whose background is unclear and whose purpose coming to Europe is unclear. Again, those people who are coming to Europe paying a huge money, young men are coming here. If they have a trouble at their home, they are young men. They should fight then for their rights at their home country. And not really coming here and then claiming like in Italy, they come to Italy, now Italy is receiving them, giving them bread and clothes and whatsoever, and they are still unhappy. I just today, I showed them another video where they are claiming that food, pasta, what the food is that? It's red, we don't like it. So you see, this is a maybe very, very small example, but I mean that I hope that the whole idea of this today's interview is really to speak frankly, to speak directly, to speak among Europeans that we must wake up. We should stop this stupid political correctness until it is late. Until it's late, we don't have too much time to be politically correct. It will be a very, very sad end if we will continue just closing and closing our eyes and continuing the same policies. People who are coming to Europe, either they follow the European rules, they accept our culture, our traditions, they integrate to European communities, but we have seen so many now practices in all European countries, including Sweden, where we see that people are coming in, setting up their own rules, setting up their own laws, and we cannot wait until we will see jihad on the territory of Europe.
Well, it's causing a lot of tension, a lot of conflict, cultural and religious misunderstandings, and And while there might be some people who think that this is all great and good, the end result seems to be different. And if diversity was so great and all that, I don't understand why this has to be forced, just as the European Union recently has suggested, that all member states must take in immigrations, despite the fact that the country democratically might vote against it. I mean, we know that's very rare that there actually are elections about these questions where the people in the country actually are asked, do you want to have more immigration? How much do you want? There's never any discussion about it. And that's what's bothered me, too, because I think if we would ask the people, I think we'd get a clear message of what people really think about it. But how have you heard about this in Estonia now, when it comes to what actually might happen? Has the European Union declared to you guys that, okay, you have to take in this quota? And if so, how has your current, the politicians in power in Estonia, perceived the situation? Are they open to take them in, or are they critical? What do you know about this?
Well, the position of the government has been quite unclear since the European Commission first. They suggested 2 weeks ago approximately 300 people that Estonia should receive, and a few days later they suggested that about 1,000 and more people Estonia should receive. The government has been quite silent, and finally, after now this 2 weeks pressure, what we started on the government, the people's movements, pressure, several demonstrations, what we have had in Estonia. Now finally the government said that no, this quota is not acceptable to Estonia because it's too high. But still it's unclear what the government has in plan, because we don't know how many people then they will be finally ready to receive. And the Estonian movement now, who is collecting the signatures among people of Estonia, we say no, we say zero. We should not open the doors of massive immigration. Yes, we will continue our usual practices of receiving refugees through the normal procedures, as we always have had these 20 years under the rules of the United Nations. But the European Union does not have any right to say to any country that how many people one or another country should receive. We don't have the common quotas in Europe. We don't have these common immigration policies in Europe. Each and every country must have the right to decide themselves, either they take them or not.
Right, yeah. I forget the exact number, but according to the definition of the UNHCR that handles the refugee questions, I think at least into Sweden, there were only about 2 or 3% that were actually classified as real refugees, and there's a lot of other people that are taking advantage of the situation. But even if you look at it from the point of view of the liberal progressives that want to have open borders into European countries, why is it fair that those few people that have the money and finances and means and capability to escape their country to get in? I mean, where by this reasoning, everyone in these other countries should come to Europe to get for equality's sake, to get an equal opportunity, right? So where does this end? When we have a million people, 2 million people, 10 million people, there's a lot of people in the world that would love to come to Europe or America or other countries in the West and get an opportunity, right?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And actually, I'm afraid that this is a sort of process what may explode the whole European Union up. Next year, as we all know, there will be the referendum in the United Kingdom. And it's quite possible that they really leave European Union. And if it happens, then I guess that the process will continue, and then the whole Nordic area is based off of Europe may want to join a sort of new organization taking together the Nordic countries, Nordic traditions, and also including then closing the borders. I mean that from the south, but this is a danger. Exactly, this is here. It's really the big danger. Even if Estonia, for example, says zero, even if Sweden says one day, no, we stop now this immigration by the quotas or just sort of massive immigration, then now, according to the European law, really all those people who have the legal status in Europe, they can freely move across the Europe. And again, our borders, then we simply cannot close these doors. Even if Estonia formally will not allow those Africans, this massive immigration entering to the country today, then they will be here anyway 1 year later. If they will receive the legal status in some many other countries of European Union, and then this is a process. Again, I should say that the whole European people, Europeans, should wake up. It's only one way to stand up against of this kind of policies. This is absolutely not serious. It's so unfair, and that's a crime against Europeans. If someone says in Europe, the politicians say that, oh, we cannot close this Mediterranean border, it's so difficult to defend the southern borders. What does it mean? Estonia has a border with Russian Federation. If we will say, oh, we are not able to protect the Peipus Lake, what it means? So shall we open the doors to every Russian who wants to come, Russian citizen, I mean, from Siberia, from Sakhalin, they can all cross the Europe. What does it mean? Shall we open our borders? And if we would do it, you can imagine what kind of big scream it will be across the Europe. But just imagine, just put these two parallels, and you will see that how unfair situation we are in Europe. Why this southern border is not protected? Why it's open? Why these big warships are just waiting in the southern harbors of European Union, just waiting for their phone calls when they are calling from Libya or somewhere in the free waters of the Mediterranean war to pick up those young men coming by boats.
Yeah.
So it's a terrifying process. It's a really terrifying process. It's sort of a process that started and if we don't stop this, if people of Europe don't stop it, then we are going to lose this game.
Well, that's just it. People don't understand where this is going for various reasons. It might not be clear to them now, but the demographic change in these countries, many people might not see it now, but currently the demographic makeup is very different, or the fertility rates, I should say, because many Europeans, they have one, two children, maybe three usually, but many other people that come into our countries have many, many more children than that. And if we, again, look at a country like Sweden, we might become a minority in our own country in three, four generations from now. I mean, you can't replace the population in a country and then expect the country to remain the same. What do you think the changes are going to be like in Europe if we don't stop this now and try to regain some sanity about this question?
Yeah, well, this is the question where no one has really the good solution, because it's a fact that all the demographic situation of the Europeans, the historical Europeans, is weak. The population of Europeans is going down, and we cannot really change this process. But what we should do then to just reorganize our lives and our thinking and our perspectives, that it's clear that we cannot find the solution on this this question just taking people from Africa to Europe. What does it mean? Then Europe will die out. I mean, that, like I said in my Facebook page that I see that the white race is in danger, and I mean it. I mean, this is a serious threat. I mean, that it will not happen tomorrow, but if we see in perspective, if we see it in 20, 25 years forward. So I think that the current politicians should be not so naive, thinking that something will be changed automatically, that in a way Europeans can defend and preserve their nations, historical nations, if they will at the same time, if they will allow and come the Africans or whomever in massively to European countries. This is not the solution. I mean that if the population of historical Europeans is reducing, then this is a fact, and we should live with this fact and not really to try to find some sort of other solutions, like even already in 2008. It's quite a long time ago. There was a sort of report and discussion among the European economic leaders that Europe would need by 2025 at least 50 million or 56 million people coming from other regions of the world to Europe.
Wow.
In order to preserve a sort of economic capacity and so on for Europe. And if Europeans are so small and we're getting smaller, okay, then we should live with this and not replacing the European nations by someone else.
So exactly.
Why do we live here at all then? So we should close the curtains and die out, and that's it. This is the option. But now we can still avoid this terrible future, and I'm sure we can avoid this future and this dark future of Europeans. We should really wake up and take into practices different things to defend and protect historical Europeans For example, one idea that I was always promoting, and I don't understand why we cannot do it more in Europe. It's like using the surrogate mothers, for example. Many European families, especially women, the modern women, they don't want to have too many children born by themselves. But I think that if there was a possibility to have the surrogate mothers, for example, which is technologically easy and possible, we could have much bigger families, European families. And again, this is a very political, very sensitive question. It's sort of, again, absolutely even more politically incorrect what I'm saying now when speaking about immigrating the Africans to Europe.
Populations rise and fall, Christina. I mean, I think naturally populations, they go up and down. There's a natural cycle here. And I think that, frankly, there is an attitude within European society right now that just needs to change. Have we not been kind of told that we're part of many of the problems that we see in the world and the education system? We're not getting taught our own history. We're getting kind of disassociated from ourselves, and I think that this is one of the aspects that leads to a lower birth rates, where for example, a lot of women are more interested in a career than to have a family, and these things have consequences. So it's a cultural question that we should change internally, not answering that by just bringing in people from abroad and replace the population.
Yes, I agree with you. I was just saying that we should reorientate our thinking. Maybe we should live a little less prosperity in comparing perhaps with our parents. I mean that the parents of the Western Europeans, I'm not speaking about Estonia because anyway it's not comparable, but I already we can see that now the young Europeans, like in their 20s, they are living in less equipped in the less prosperity than their parents did, like 20 years, or even the grandparents have maybe better off living. So So it's absolutely, I agree with you. It's a process. It's going up and down, up and down, and again. I think that this is a process where women are very much in labor market. They are very independent in Europe, and I think it's fine. It's absolutely fine. It's fine. But to promote to have the bigger families in Europe, again, I see just one very practical measure to use surrogate mothers, and I hope that this issue will be in political agenda also in coming years. Back there, that we should allow it. It's not like that European women go to India, go to Ukraine, go to Russia to get their surrogate babies. We can do it in Europe, and we would have much bigger European families.
Yeah, you're right. Now, another question that you kind of raised here is that if Europeans were coming into an area where there was a few million people somewhere else in the world, if we were coming in there and slowly replacing the population, I believe that there would be an outrage in the media. I think that in some cases they would even call this genocide. I mean, we've seen this in the past when, for example, the Chinese went into Tibet consciously to, I think, replace them or deal with the population as they saw it as a way to take over. There was an outrage, and people reacted in this way. But when you bring up this question of European preservation or the aspect that we want to try to preserve who we are, immediately we're criticized for being racist or that we hate everyone else or that somehow we are supremacist, or all these kinds of words are thrown at us as a way to make it morally reprehensible to try to defend who we are. How do you think we should fight against that? How are people afraid of being called racist and therefore the other side win, if you will? Or what can we do to fight this on the moral level?
Well, I'm absolutely sure, just basing on Estonian experience, that we are not racist. Estonian people are not racist, so I believe that that most of Europeans are not racist. Really, we don't hate any races of people, but what we have done for ourselves against ourselves in Europe is sort of stupid political so-called political correctness. For example, using the word Negro, it's like. Why it's forbidden in many countries. For example, in Estonia, in Estonian language, the word Negro has never had a negative sort of meaning or understanding.
Right.
Negro is a Negro, it's a race, it's a black man or woman, and that's it.
Yep.
And always individual is individual. If you're a good Negro or a bad Negro, if you're a good white or a bad white, it doesn't matter. It's not a racist question. And even not allowing, Jesus Christ comes to my mind, the famous Astrid Lindgren's the story for children, what I was reading when I was a child, Pippi, how do you call it?
Pippi Longstockings, they say in English.
Exactly, Pippi Longstockings in English, thank you. So even if they are going to sort of revising the text of this book, not allowing to use the word Papa Negro, or the father of Pippi was a sort of king of Negro. So what is that? It's so stupid. I mean that it's unbelievable, and we must stop it. And for example, in Estonian language, if we would use a black man or black woman, that has a semiotically much really more and much negative understanding. Black means in Estonia also dirty, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If we are now asked to say against Negroes, instead Negroes saying black, it means immediately dirty for many people.
So that's not a good word to replace it with, then, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Many people are arguing that we should call Negroes blacks, so because of the English. So,
right. So
it's all so confusing, and we must come down to the earth in Europe. We must just come back to the roots of Europeans.
Yes,
we must really think very calmly and just stop this kind of all kind of mysterious and unreal, surrealistic understandings and sort of finding of new definitions of the old words what we used to have, now replacing the old definitions, replacing them with the new, which are artificial. And the artificial life is not getting, it cannot last long, you see. I have lived in Soviet Union, I'm already 50 years old almost, so I've seen it. It was artificial. It was artificial, and yeah. it was broken up. And this kind of artificial situation that now we are facing in the European Union with this massive African and Middle East invasion, it will break up. We must stop it before it happens with a big I don't want to really be very negative, but I don't want to really see the terrible results that we can face in 5-10 years if we don't stop it right now today.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear what you're saying. I have a few more questions for you here before we wrap up for this time. And let me just comment actually on what you said first, that we're approaching it and we're living in a politically correct tyranny where words are getting banned, and it's utter hysteria, and this is not the way to go about it. There's other ways of looking at the problems we help, such as help people in their own countries and have refugee camps in areas that are closer to the regions where people are at. This is a way to prevent people from dying. So we're smart people. We can figure this out. There's many other ways of doing this, but let's for a moment speak about the kind of work that you've been doing in Estonia to raise awareness about these things, and tell us how the reception has been. Are you being well received? Are people in the media criticizing you? Just tell us about what has happened.
Well, the process actually in Estonia started approximately 2 weeks ago. The big debate about the refugees and the massive immigration to Estonia, then the society actually flipped. One side of the society is the government, and the government-controlled media. I must unfortunately say that most of Estonian media, not only public but also private media, is very much trying to follow also this political correctness line still. But in these 2 weeks when I took in, because I'm just one of those who took a lead, there are some other the citizens community leaders who are taking the lead in internet, in Facebook, in some communities, internet communities. After this change about 2 weeks ago, I guess that also the rhetorics of press is getting more balanced. I've been inviting to several programs to speak about this issue. This one thing, and most important still, there is a sort of we are living in internet area, in internet area, and Facebook is fortunately available, despite of the fact, by the way, that I was shut down for 1 week from Facebook. I was thrown down there. I was closed in Facebook because I used the word negro.
Oh.
Yes, I was down for 1 week, so I was out of this possibility to communicate to people.
But now that was in your own language. That was in Estonian, and you just clarified
that.
You clarified what this means, and it doesn't mean the same in English. But I guess that was enough for them to shut you out for a while. Yeah.
Yes, I got stuck to Facebook, and then I started all this long-lasting procedure to getting back to Facebook. Then I got explanation from Facebook administrator that the reason why I was taken down, and there was just one sentence what I used in my private chat with some other Facebook user, I said, "Negro is negro, isn't it? Isn't he? Mm. Isn't she?" So for this sentence, I was taken down for 1 week. But nevertheless,
yeah.
I come back to your question that I'm now back, and fortunately now people are now volunteering across Estonia. Now, over this weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, we are going to continue collecting the physical and internet, because we, Estonia, have the e-signature, has a legal status. We are collecting the signatures of Estonian people in the big cities. The volunteers, they have nothing to do with my party. They are just people who have been writing to me, asking the lists of the documents where they can give their signatures with their ID code. And we are continuing collecting the signatures, and not in Estonia only, by the way. We are doing it across the world, including Sweden. There are some volunteers in Sweden. There are volunteers in Finland, in United States, in the United Kingdom. So I have been receiving many, many Estonian letters across the world, and not only Estonian letters. It is maybe also interesting to you that people from South Africa, for example, South Africans, the white people, are just congratulating and supporting my statements that help and try to protect the white people in South Africa who have been killed. By blacks already, by a couple of hundreds of people, even more have been killed there. So I've been, I'm from New Zealand, from Australia, I'm from India. I'm receiving the letters across the world, and I of course try to consolidate first of all the Estonians and give them the possibility to give the signatures, to send the signal first of all to our parliament in Estonia, to our government in Estonia. But those signatures, what we are collecting now, we are going to present them also to the European Commission, to show that that this is not their business to decide what Estonia should do. Estonia is still an independent country, despite of the fact that we are a member of the European Union. The immigration policy, especially the policy what we are facing right now, is not a common policy of the European Union. It's not like the trade policy. It's not like a common agricultural policy. This is just sort of idea of European Commission just to divide those immigrants among the European countries. And this is unacceptable, it's unfair, it's against Europeans, it's not only against Estonians, it's against Europeans. And I just want to call that all Europeans who feel that that the European Commission or their own governments are behaving against the will of people, they should stand up. They should forget about this stupid political correctness and fight for their own rights in their own countries until it's late.
Yes, I agree. Now, is petition the way to go to get things done politically, or is it more that can be done in your opinion? What do you have something else planned next to raise awareness about this?
I think that the awareness is growing, not because of our activities. I mean that people, just ordinary citizens, they see what's happening around themselves, what's happening in European countries, in Germany, in France, in Sweden. People, I think that those processes, what we have experienced last, let's say, 20 years, this has been a slow process, step by step. People in one or another way in different European countries have adopted this, that the local people, the Europeans, have adopted the situation because of the humanity and so on. But now the situation is absolutely different. It's not the same like it was 5 years ago. It's just invasion of the European territory. It's just not the normal process. If we are speaking about not only about hundreds of or even not about thousands of people, if we are speaking about millions of people, then it's a danger to the whole future of Europe.
Yes,
and we must stop it.
I agree. I mean, what would you like to say to Europeans, wherever they might be, something I guess you'd like to, you know, more or less leave us with, to make them understand the importance, the gravity of taking this question seriously? Maybe there's something you'd like to say to those who, for example, doubt that this is happening or going to happen, that we're going to be displaced in our own countries. What would you say to people?
Well, just very simply, just take your time. Take your time yourself and then think about it. Look at the facts. Read the facts, the news, what's going on, and then just think what it means, not only to you, but what it will mean to your children in 10, 20 or 50 years, what it means for Europe in 50 years time perspective. Take your decision and talk your friends, discuss it openly and frankly, and I think that I believe that if we can unite Europeans, then it's a big and a very strong force. In unity, there is a big force. Like from the experience of Estonians at the end of the 80s, when we had the singing revolution here, and all of the people of Estonia just united and fought for their rights, because we were in the right side. If you finally understand that you are doing the right thing, you can speak honestly and directly without the political correctness. If you can look to the truth, to the face of the truth, then you are on the right side and you should do right things until it's late.
Yeah, we need a kind of a pan-European cooperation movement that is beyond the European Union, of course, because they have created a lot of the problems. I know that Estonia joined the EU in 2004 when the biggest expansion phase occurred. You also joined NATO and some of these other organizations, but I think there can exist a cooperation across European countries, but that isn't bound by the negative sides of the centralization that we've seen with the European Union. So I think you're absolutely right there. Now, Kristina, tell us how people can get in touch with you. Do you have a website, maybe an email address, or perhaps a Facebook page that you'd like to give out to people so they can either get in touch with you or send you email if they have questions or something like that?
Yeah, well, my email is, I think, the easiest and the fastest way, because other sources are quite overloaded. It's kristina.hojuland@gmail.com. So it's my name just, and it's a Gmail address, and I promise if you write me, I will respond to you.
Well, thank you. We'll have that email up as well. We'll link it in a good way so you don't get spam, but so people can get it so they know the spelling of your name as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Kristina. Thank you for doing what you're doing, for bringing attention to this, for working with everything you're doing. It feels like it's something that is uphill at the moment, unfortunately, and a lot of people are critical of these kinds of critiques that we bring to the table, but I think it's absolutely essential for the preservation of who we are, basically, and to realize that this is a severe situation, and despite that this might not be in front of people's eyes at this moment, is going to be shortly if it continues as it does. So thank you again for joining us. Keep up the good work, and we'd love to speak with you again in the future. Good luck with your work.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and all the best to all.
And that wraps up for this time, folks. We mostly do two segments with our guests, but Kristina is very busy, and we aim to have her back in the future for an update on what is happening in Estonia and the Baltic region. But she is doing very important work informing people about what is happening and leading the way, despite that the media instantly brands you a hater for caring about your own people. The other thing is that this is only happening in European countries. Self-preservation and looking out for your own interests, this is something that comes naturally to almost every other people, except for us Europeans. But people like Kristina helps us to see these things and should be an inspiration to us so that we also can stand up and speak out about what is happening right now and the population replacement that has been initiated against us. Well, before we end for this time, we have more coming with Matthew Tate, Kurt Doolittle, Justin Garcia, some of the guys from The Right Stuff, the Daily Showa, and also Tim Murdoch, and later Roger Devlin. But we will return with the Radio 314 next with Fernando Cortes from Generation Identitaire in Mexico. That should be an interesting program, so don't miss that. But ladies and gentlemen, if you like what we do, please consider signing up for a membership with us, Red Ice members, estoniaradio.com. Go there to check out our archives. We have close to 1,000 programs on many of the most important and pressing issues of our times. Most shows are 2 hours, but we also have videos, films, inside episodes, and much more. Okay, folks, thank you so much for listening today. Stay strong and stay brave. And we will talk to you in just a couple of days again. Take good care of yourself and your loved ones.